So it's Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 to 16. It says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, 'The Lord has kept me from having children. Go and sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her.' Abram agreed to what Sarah said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarah said to Abram, 'You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me.' 'Your servant is in your hands,' Abram said. 'Do with her whatever you think best.' Then Sarah mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, servant of Sarah, where have you come from? And where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah,' she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' The angel added, 'I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count.' The angel of the Lord said to her, 'You are now with child, and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all of his brothers.' She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees me.' For she said, 'I have now seen the one who sees me.' That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael." This is the word of the Lord. Now, I understand that there are a lot of layers and complexities to the story of Hagar. And all of these layers and all of these complexities to the story are very important. But this morning, I want us to think about this story, and I want us to look at it through the very specific lens of what it teaches us about hospitality. What it teaches us about hospitality. And before we can do that, before we can study this passage through that lens, I think we need to consider a couple other passages in Scripture that talk about hospitality. In Romans 12, verses 9 to 13, Paul talks about what it means to put love into action. It is possibly the most practical part of the book of Romans, and Paul lists many different ways that a Christian can put love into action. And specifically, in verse 13, he says that all Christians are to practice hospitality. The Greek word that he uses for hospitality is philoxenia. Philoxenia. Philos, meaning brotherly love, the root of that word, that city, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, philos. And xenia, meaning foreigner or stranger, someone who is not from your tribe or your nation or your community. The love of foreigners. Paul says Christians are to practice philoxenia, as opposed to what was more common, which was xenophobia. Xenophobia, the fear of foreigners, the fear of strangers. Paul says that Christians have this duty in love to practice hospitality. And he uses the same word in Titus and 1 Timothy when he's listing the qualifications of elders, the qualifications for leadership in church. In both of those passages, there's a list of the things that elders and even deacons need to have in order to be considered for leadership in the church. And in both cases, he lists the word hospitable. They are supposed to be people of hospitality. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9, Peter says that we are to offer hospitality without grumbling. We are to offer hospitality without grumbling, without complaining, without asking questions, using whatever we have received from God to do it. Our homes, our food, our clothes, anything that we have received from God, we are to use to offer hospitality to others. And then Jesus himself calls us to this higher level of hospitality in Matthew chapter 5, verses 46 and 47. This is the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' most striking and powerful sermon. He says, "If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors and sinners doing that? And if you welcome only your own people, only your own family, what are you doing more than others? Do not even non-believers do that?" Jesus says loving your own people, loving the people who look like you and talk like you and that you know, everybody does this. Every culture, every nation, every religion, people do this. But he says not everybody welcomes those who they don't know. Not everybody welcomes people who don't look like them or talk like them or believe the same things that they do. And Jesus says, this is what separates you from those other people. And this was something that Jesus did all the time. In fact, the number one thing that the Pharisees accused Jesus of was spending time with sinners, spending time with outsiders, spending time with those who were unclean or dangerous or kept outside of the community. Jesus was often found in their homes, or often found in the places in the community where those people would gather. It's striking to me as a biblical scholar, it's striking to me as a theologian, that Jesus, Peter, and Paul, three of the three most prominent people of the New Testament, put hospitality at the top of the list of things that they say define Christian action. And so I want to take that lens. I want to take that understanding and want to use it to look back now at the story of Hagar. And I believe if we do that, that we're going to see that God is demonstrating hospitality to Hagar. And in doing so, he reveals what he has done for us, what he has done to us. And he also gives us an example of how we can show hospitality to others. So that's the purpose for the rest of our time this morning. So if you'll look back at me down, look back with me now at the story of Hagar, there's a few things that I see that relate to this idea of hospitality. And the first thing that I see in this passage is that Hagar is driven away from her home for no fault of her own. She doesn't do anything wrong. The cause of her having to leave, the cause of her being forced to run to the desert, is not her own doing. The situation in her life has just spiraled out of control. It's shocking the way that things have come together against her, and she feels that she has no choice but to run away from Abraham and Sarah. Now, to go away from people into the desert on your own, you only do that if you believe you have no choice. You only do that if you believe the desert is actually safer for you than staying with the group of people that you are with. So she is alone and isolated and in a desert. She is in a highly vulnerable situation. I don't know if any of you have ever been to another country, to a foreign country. Already, just going to another country, it is a bit of an unnerving experience, especially if they don't speak the same language that you speak. But to be in another country alone and in a situation where you really need help, this is a very tough place to be. I believe that this is the situation that Hagar found herself in. Alone, in a country that's not her own, and at a time in life where she just really needed some help. She has no other means of protection. She does not have a family. She does not have police. She does not have government. She does not have anybody that can come to her rescue. She is alone. It makes sense to me that this is where God would show up, if that's the situation that Hagar was in. The second thing that I see about Hagar in this passage is that Hagar is not a believer. Hagar is an Egyptian slave, essentially, traveling with Abraham and Sarah. She doesn't believe in God. It's very likely that she is a worshiper of the many gods of the Egyptian people. But even though she is not a believer, even though she is not a Christian, even though she doesn't believe in God, that does not make her irrelevant to God. She is not secondary to his consideration. You see, God actually pursues Hagar with the same interest as he pursues Abraham and Sarah. See, God's concern for people, God's concern for hospitality, is not dependent on whether or not a person believes in him first. As soon as Hagar was in need, God is concerned, and he goes to meet her. He doesn't turn his face from her when she leaves the presence of Abraham and Sarah. And being a non-believer, it doesn't make her dangerous to God. You see, God is not worried about what influence Hagar will bring into the community as a non-believer. He's not worried about what influence she is going to bring into the community. See, if God was worried about this, he wouldn't have told Hagar to come back. But he does. He says, Hagar, don't go back. Come back into the community. If God was concerned about what influence she would bring, he would have just left her in the desert. Or he would have gone to her in the desert, given her what she needed, and sent her, continue her back to Egypt, where she came from. But God says, no, come back into the community. See, God doesn't wait until Hagar deserves help to give help. See, God just sees someone in need. And Paul confirmed this when he said that while we were still sinners, God rescued us. He didn't wait until we deserved to be rescued. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Jesus says the same thing. He says, it's not the healthy. I didn't come for the healthy. The healthy don't need a doctor. It's the sick who need a doctor. I see this in the story of Hagar. This small picture of one person in the Old Testament, this story of Hagar, is the same story of our own lives. You see, we are the foreigners. We are Hagar. We are the ones wandering in the desert. We're no better. We're no different. We're not special in any way. But God comes to us the same way he came to Hagar. See, this is where Christian hospitality starts. It's what God has done for once. So we were once the bad influences. We were once the dangerous people. We were once those who were on the outside. The Bible says that Christ adopted us into the family of God. We were once outside. You can't be adopted if you were already inside. We were once on the outside. And all of this language of hospitality, it comes together in this idea. So what does God actually do when he meets Hagar in the desert? What God does is he practices a ministry of presence. It's a ministry of presence. You see, if you look very, very closely, God does not actually solve Hagar's problem. In fact, we could kind of look at it and say, you know, God, what are you doing sending Hagar back to Abraham and Sarah? Because they were not very nice to her. And now you want her to go back? He doesn't actually solve her problem. A lot of times we have this feeling that if I can't solve somebody's problem, you know, then what good am I going to do if I go there? And God says, no, that's not hospitality. Hospitality isn't necessarily about solving someone's problems. Hospitality is a ministry of presence. It's about being present with someone in their situation. God comes to Hagar and he sits down next to her and he says, Hagar, where are you coming from? Hagar, where are you going? He has a deep conversation with Hagar about her story, her future, her hopes, her dreams, her fear of being pregnant and raising a kid as a slave with people who are mistreating her. And this must have meant something to Hagar. Just this ministry of presence must have meant something to Hagar because she was so committed to going in one direction. But after meeting God, she's willing to turn around and go back in the direction that she came from to a situation that she knows is far less than perfect. So God comes into her presence in a very meaningful way. And the last thing that I see in this passage comes from this theology of the names of God that are revealed in this passage. God, when he talks to Hagar and he tells her that she's going to have a son, God says, Hagar, I want you to name your son Ishmael. And what a beautiful name Ishmael is, because God says that his name means that I have heard your misery. Being heard means that you have a voice. With Abraham and Sarah, Hagar did not have a voice. She did not have a choice about what was going to happen with her. Everything was forced on her. But God says, Hagar, with me, you have a voice, and I heard you. When I walk through refugee camps, when I speak to people who are walking the refugee highway, the thing that they tell me the most is that they wish they had a voice. No one listens to us. No one asks us what we want. No one wants to know our solutions to our own problems. We have no voice. But God gives Hagar a voice. He says, I heard you. And not only do we see this name of God, we see Hagar's response. God actually allows Hagar, this non-believer, this non-Christian, this Egyptian slave, he gives her the honor of actually calling out the name of God, a name that has stood for eternity. She says, you, God, are the God who sees. And what that means is, you are the God who sees me. You are the God who sees each and every person and their situation. And she says, that's what I'm going to name this place, because I met the God who sees. God hears. God sees. God cares. That is hospitality. That is philoxenia. That changes everything for Hagar. And I don't want to draw a lot of attention to this point, but the thing that I see in this story that is very difficult for me to point out is the contrast between the way God treats Hagar and the way Abraham and Sarah treat Hagar. You see, one excludes Hagar. One pushes her out of the community. And one has open arms and welcomes her into the community. And that contrast is something that we have to wrestle with in our own hearts. You see, the story of Hagar is repeating itself over and over and over again today. It's not just a story that happened in the past. It's a story that's happening all around us each and every day today. You see, I said there are 68.5 million people literally living in the desert in East Africa, in Central Africa, in West Africa, in North Africa, in the Middle East, in refugee camps. One in every 100 people in the world is stuck in places that I go and see on a regular basis. And this doesn't even consider the people who have been affected by natural disasters and who are in different stages of human trafficking. We're talking about millions more people. You see, more people are affected by famine and drought today than at any other point in human history. Food security and water security are bigger problems now than they have ever been. There are actually 30 conflicts going on in the world that have been going on for more than 20 years. 20-year-long wars, there are more than 30 of them in the world today. There's more failed states, failed nation states, governments that can't protect their own people, police that can't protect their own people than ever before. And people are on the run for no fault of their own, just like Hagar. The situations that they're in have just shocked their system so badly that they're making the desperate decision to run and to look for safety in another place. But even right here in West Michigan, there are people like Hagar. They're expressing the same thoughts, the same feelings as Hagar. They feel like they live in a community that is oppressing them. They feel like they live in a community that is excluding them and that isn't listening to their voice the way Hagar felt with Sarah. You see, there's people in West Michigan, there's people right here in the greater Kalamazoo area who are feel like they are spiritually dry, empty, the way Hagar felt in the desert. And this is coming out. We are seeing this come out in the United States in more and more desperate ways. We're seeing it come out in more and more dangerous ways. We are seeing higher and higher addiction rates. We are seeing higher and higher rates of depression. We're seeing higher and higher rates of suicide and harmful behavior. We're seeing more violent acts. Because people are looking around and they're not seeing hospitality. They're not seeing people with arms open. They're seeing people with arms closed. You see, I hate to do this. I hate to bring us into this difficult feeling, but I feel like to be true to this passage, we have to think about this. You see, the people who failed in the story of Hagar were Abraham and Sarah. They were the people of God at that time. We, the church, are the people of God today. See, this message isn't for other people. The message isn't for those outside the church. The message is for those of us inside the church. Are we following the example of God, or are we emulating the behaviors of Abraham and Sarah? See, I see people who, in my work, I see people who are walking like Hagar. They haven't done anything wrong, but there's still no place for them to go. Even though they are innocent, even though they are not the perpetrators of violence, they are being labeled as dangerous. They are being labeled as criminals. They are being labeled as people who will bring bad influences into our country if we let them in. So we need to keep them outside. I'm not talking about America. I don't generally work in America. I'm talking about what I see and hear in other places. This is the rhetoric that I hear from most countries. And yet these are the people who deserve help. And we take it a step further and we say, well, what about the people who don't even deserve help? Hagar wasn't a Christian. Did she deserve God's help? Should we be showing the same hospitality even to people who don't deserve it? Who don't want it? Who won't return our hospitality with the same kind of love? See, the question that we have to ask ourselves, and it's not a question that is about even what are we doing around the world, but it's just a question of what are we doing right here, is are we present with the people in the community? Are we present with the people around us who are like Hagar, or are we keeping the situation at arm's length? Are we keeping the people just far enough outside that they can't come into our community? So as we reflect on this, I want to end with three things. I want to end with this idea of, well, what can we do? We've studied what God did with Hagar. We've looked at our own situation. You guys know your community better than I do. If we want to be people who show Christian hospitality, if we want to be like Hagar, if we want to be like Jesus, what can we do? So the first thing that I think we can do is we need to check our default position. What's your default position? When you hear the word foreigner, when you hear the word stranger, when you hear the word refugee, what is the first thing that you think of? What's the first thing that comes to mind? Where is your heart at? What's your first reaction? That's your default position. You see, a lot of times we don't actually think about our default position. We don't realize what our default position is, but our default position can be one of two things. Our default position can be open, or our default position can be closed. We all know the story of Matthew 25. when Jesus separates the sheep and the goats. And he says, you know, when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was naked, you gave me clothes. When I had no home, you invited me in. And it's striking because both people say, when? Like, we didn't see you. We didn't know that we were doing that. The sheep who welcomed God in, their default position was like, our arms are open. Like, if we see somebody who needs help, we help them. Like, they don't even think about it. But the goats, their default position was closed. And they don't even think about it. It's like, no, I don't help people like that. It's not what I do. So what's your default position? Are you open or are you closed? The second thing that we can do is, if we want to be people of hospitality, is we can just start with one person. One person at a time, the same way God started with Hagar. See, and don't worry if you can't solve all of a person's problems. It's quite possible, it's quite likely that you alone cannot solve every problem of somebody who's in need. And that's okay. That's okay. But be willing to be present with them at the moment. And even if they don't respond well, even if they don't take your kindness well, even if they turn around and still act out in a poor way, that's okay. Be faithful to what God has called us to do and let God take care of the rest. I've had a lot of refugees. I've had a lot of people that have taken advantage of my kindness. I've had a lot of people that just want to see what they can get from me. They just want to try and get a little bit of money or something in order to make their life easier. And that's okay. There's going to be people like that everywhere you go. But just start with one person. And the last thing that I think we can do is to practice hospitality as one church, as this church. See, all of my travels around the world have taught me one thing. The church can do so much more than anyone or anything else. The church can do more than government. The church can do more than hospitals. The church can do more than schools. The church can do more than any other organization or entity in the world. See, alone, the problems, even here in Kalamazoo, can be overwhelming. But if you work together as the church, the problem is not so difficult. Because there's so many gifts. There's so many resources. There's so many talents. There's so many skills. There's so many expertise that are in the hearts and minds and hands of the people in the church. One person does not need to be responsible for meeting all the needs. I'm so excited when I come to this church because I actually see hospitality. Last time I was here, it was around Thanksgiving time, and I was listening to, I think, Pastor Paul talk about how many meals were going to be delivered to people in the community on Thanksgiving. And I come today, and I hear how many 91 backpacks already are going to be given to kids in the community that are in really significant need for school supplies. That is how the church is supposed to work. It's beautiful and it's amazing, and I'm so happy to see that and hear that as somebody who is not here each and every day. So God sees, God hears, and God cares. He met Hagar in a time of desperate need. She didn't deserve his help, but still he went and found her. And so I pray, and I encourage you, please continue to be the kind of church that does show hospitality to the people in your community, that supports missionaries around the world, and that stands up and says that we have our arms open And we want to welcome people into our space and into our lives and into our community the way God has welcomed us.